In the new comic novel Straight Man, William Henry Devereaux Jr. is facing middle age as the chairman of the English department on a small college campus utterly lacking in prestige. My guest is the author, Richard Russo. Academic life is a new subject for him. His previous novels, Mohawk, Risk Pool, and Nobody's Fool, were about life for the working class and unemployed in a fictional small town in upstate New York, a town based on the one he grew up in. Nobody's Fool was adapted into a movie starring Paul Newman. Here's a reading from the prologue of the new novel, Straight Man, in which Devereaux is thinking back on his childhood, his relationship with his father, and the day his dog died and was buried by Devereaux's father. The father was a very successful academic and literary theorist.
In the years after he left us, my father became even more famous. He is sometimes credited, if credit is the word, with being the father of American literary theory. In addition to his many books of scholarship, he's also written a literary memoir that was shortlisted for a major award and that offers insight into the personalities of several major literary figures of the 20th century, now deceased. His photograph often graces the pages of the literary reviews. He went through a phase where he wore crewneck sweaters and gold chains beneath his tweed coat, but now he's mostly photographed in an Oxford button-down shirt, tie, and jacket in his book-lined office at the university. But to me, his son, William Henry Devereaux Sr. is most real standing in his ruined Cordovan loafers, leaning on the handle of a borrowed shovel, examining his dirty, blistered hands and receiving my suggestion of what to name a dead dog. I suspect that digging our dog's grave was one of the relatively few experiences of his life, excepting carnal ones that did not originate on the printed page. And when I suggested we name the dead dog Red, he looked at me as if I had just stepped from the pages of a book that he had started to read years ago and then put down when something else caught his interest. "What?" he said, letting go of the shovel so that its handle hit the earth between my feet. "What?" It's not an easy time for any parent, this moment when the realization dawns on you that you have given birth to something that will never see things the way you do, despite the fact that it is your living legacy, that it bears your name.
That's Richard Russo reading from his new novel, Straight Man. You know, it's interesting, your previous books have been about fathers who are working class or out of work, people who do manual labor. And in this new book, the father is the father of literary theory. He's an academic father, someone who's experienced everything as filtered through the page. I'm wondering if you started comparing in your mind the frustrations of having a father who was out of work a lot to the frustrations of having a father who's a star in the academic field and is also incredibly self-absorbed.
Right. I mean, what of course, the fathers in the earlier books and this father have in common is that they are not there for the boy in question. William Henry Devereaux Sr. is not only going to leave, but he's not really there, even in the beginning of this book, when he is there. I mean, he's there, he's living in the family, he's there at the dinner table. But in some important way, he's absent. He is self-absorbed, but he's also absorbed in language, in the word, in the life of the mind. And I think he's the kind of man for whom a child isn't really going to be all that interested until the child probably gets older and can approach him on the same plane that he's used to being approached by students and fellow faculty members. And of course, by the time a kid gets that old, probably the things he's going to have to say to such a father will be the kinds of things that no father wants to hear.
In your early novels, you drew a lot on your relationship with your father, who you never lived with because your parents separated when you were very young.
Yeah.
And, your father, it sounds from your fiction, must have been an eccentric, a bit of a drunk, a bit of a con man, but very lovable in his own way. I'm wondering if when he died a few years ago, if your reactions to the loss surprised you.
No, my very profound reaction to my father's loss was not something by that time that surprised me. My father and I became very close, and since both Sam Hall and Donald Sullivan are written large, I'm afraid that people might get the wrong impression about my own father, that he was perhaps more of a rogue than he actually was in real life. He was a man who played an enormous part, sometimes just by his absence, in my own imagination as a child. By the time that I was in college and returning home in the summers to work road construction with him, he had begun to play an even larger role in my life and in my imagination. And by the time he fell ill when I was writing The Risk Pool, he and I had become very close. And it did not take me entirely by surprise how much that I was going to miss him, the ways in which I would continue to see him and think about him and think in terms of him for, you know, the decade or so that it's been.
In a previous novel, you wrote about the small upstate New York town the characters lived in. Everyone lived pretty near the edge of unemployment, of lunacy, of bankruptcy, of potentially hazardous ignorance, of despair. And hence the local custom was that you only worried about people nearest the brink. Otherwise, you'd worry yourself over the edge. Did you used to assume that with education and with money and with employment, that despair goes away?
I'm not so sure that I thought that exactly. And I think, for me, straight man is as I think your question is angling at, is about a different kind of despair entirely. As a matter of fact, it's a despair at the very other end of the spectrum. I think Hank Devereaux in this novel, Lucky Hank as he is known to his friends and enemies alike, is a man who has done an awful lot of what he wanted to do in life. He has built the house that he wanted to build. He has become a tenured full professor at perhaps not the academic institution that he imagined himself at, but he has been promoted to a point where he can't go anywhere else. He has married the woman that he wants to marry and that he is perhaps even more deeply in love with than he realizes during the book. He has children who have grown up healthy and well. He has, in a kind of metaphorical sense, he has a kind of tenure in life. And it's the very sense of this kind of tenure in life, of the fact that things are going well and may continue to go well, and the fact that his story, as it were, if he looks at his own life as a story, he can kind of sense where it's going. And I think that's what, when people begin to sense that they know exactly where their life is going, that they've made most of their decisions in life that are going to be of consequence, and now what you're doing is sitting back and waiting for all of these choices that you've made to kind of play themselves out, a new and very different and very virulent kind of despair begins to set in when you sense that your story is nearing its conclusion and that most of the interesting choices that you had are the choices that you've already made and are now looking back on.
Now, why did you choose that as a theme?
I suppose that there are autobiographical reasons to write a book like that. I feel incredibly blessed in my own life. I'm doing, you know, by some almost miraculous happenstance, I seem to be doing exactly what I want to do at this point. I tell stories, which is a very enjoyable thing for me to do. I have a wonderful family, but there's a sense that you get that everybody, I think, in middle age gets. I think this is really a novel about middle age, of having a lot of happiness, a lot of if you're lucky enough to have had some success, to be very pleased with what you've done. But Hank is the kind of man who would dearly love to start over, just to be at the beginning of something again, as opposed to the middle or the middle towards the end. Because one of the things that you know when you get to be middle age is that you're not going to start again.
You taught for 24 years and retired from full-time teaching a couple of years ago. Why did you leave?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. like most middle-aged people, we begin to hear the clock ticking. I don't know how many more novels I've got in me, but I wanted to make sure that whatever amount of time I have, I won't leave any books unwritten that I've got in me. And when you start pushing 50, you begin to realize that there just isn't an infinite amount of time, and you begin to think about how you might spend your time as wisely as you possibly can. And also another reason, almost as important, was that most teachers begin to feel after they've been teaching for 20 years or so, even if you believe what you're teaching and what you're saying to students, after you've said it for about the 100th time, you begin to be aware of not only just being awfully tired of repeating yourself, but you also become aware of all the things that you don't know, you yourself don't know. And as I continue to write, I become more and more aware of the gigantic ignorance that I'm laboring under. There are things that I need to know about medicine, about law, about real estate, about art, about all sorts of things that I would be wise to learn something about, since I seem to be casting characters who are in some of those professions. And not being a full-time academic has freed me to become a much wider and much more voracious reader, and instead of, imparting for the umpteenth time what little I do know, kind of supplementing what I know with some other things that I badly need to know.
My guest is Richard Russo. His new novel is called Straight Man. We'll talk more in a minute. This is Fresh Air. Back with Richard Russo, his new comic novel, Straight Man, is set on a college campus. His previous novels, Mohawk, The Risk Pool, and Nobody's Fool, were set in a working-class town in upstate New York. So we've established that your fiction has been set in two worlds that you've lived in, the world of the blue-collar small town and the world of the campus. But you've done some work in a third world, which is the world of Hollywood, the world of the celebrity class and the Hollywood executive for the movie Nobody's Fool. How closely did you work on that, and how involved did you get in that world?
Well, actually, I've become more involved with it since then. I've just finished writing a screenplay of Straight Man, and Robert Benton, who directed Nobody's Fool, and I have collaborated on another project that just finished filming. So in working on Nobody's Fool, I really did script work that began only after the movie had begun its shooting. And so I kind of tiptoed in the back door on that project, did a little bit of screen work, made a very good friend in Robert Benton, who wanted to work with me on another project. And so now I'm involved on a third, and it's a new thing. It's been kind of fun.
What was it like for you to see Paul Newman playing one of the father characters in Nobody's Fool? I mean, the father character in Nobody's Fool.
Right. It was a little unnerving at first. Paul Newman is an icon. He was too good looking. The baggage that it seemed to me that he brought to that role, and that I didn't think he was ever going to be able to get rid of, was the baggage of just being Paul Newman. I think that he has a kind of history as an icon that makes it impossible for you to dislike him, even when he's doing horrible things. You cast him in the most villainous role, as he had a villainous role in one of the recent Coen Brothers movies, and you like him. You just cannot help but like him. He's got that kind of history that trails him. And my worst fear was that in Nobody's Fool, in the movie, that we were never going to get the sense of Sully as a dangerous man, a man who could be dangerous to his family, a man who could be dangerous to anyone who gets too close to him. And I was very afraid that Paul Newman would not be able to convey that sense of what a dangerous man Sully was. And I think that Paul did remarkably well in that role, given the fact that he is an icon. I think that his his rendition of My Donald Sullivan is probably more immediately likable than Sully was in my novel. But I thought his performance was utterly compelling, and I found myself, after just a very short period of time, getting into the spirit of his notion of this man, and I thought it was terrific.
I'm wondering if your compass works for you when you're working in movies, if your sense of what's funny translates, if your sense of what an interesting story is translates, of what's entertaining, if that translates.
I don't know. I mean, we're just the second film that Robert Benton and I wrote together is being screened right now. It's
but
at that
groups?
Point that you were
test screening.
Pardon? Yeah, it's test screenings, and it's always interesting to sit in a theater with, you know, 80 or 90 people who are coming into a movie in a way that nobody actually goes into a movie for test screenings. Nobody knows what the movie's going to be about. They don't know who's in it. They don't know what kind of movie it is. Whereas in real life, really what happens is when you go to see a movie, you've seen so many trailers for it, you've seen it advertised on television. When you go into a movie, you are going to see the movie that you've already been prepared to see.
Who's in the movie that's being screened now, and what's it about?
Oh, it has a wonderful cast. It's an odd movie in some ways. I think it's a detective story, and it's set in Los Angeles. But the mystery elements of the story are not as important as the character elements. And rather than giving the audience 8 or 10 characters to choose from as to who the murderer is, you get to choose between 3 or 4, and you don't want to believe really that it's any of them. A very character-oriented piece, and the actors who are in it are just uniformly wonderful. Paul Newman plays the detective in the movie, and the other major players are Susan Sarandon and Gene Hackman and James Garner.
Interesting cast.
Yeah. They're all terrific.
You getting to work with them directly?
Actually, after the script, I think that's why fax machines were invented.
So that
movie stars don't have to deal directly with writers and vice versa. So I've been happily working away at Central Maine, putting words on a page, and you know, lo and behold, a year later, I'm hearing, you know, Gene Hackman repeat them to me.
Well, Richard Russo, I wish you good luck with your books and your movies. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Richard Russo's new novel is called Straight Man.